No, I can't quite believe we're saying that either. Yes, again, Takuma. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hey everyone, your friendly neighbour host Dre Harrison here for episode 257 of the Motorsport 101 podcast. And, what a dramatic Indy 500 we had, and this is your Indy 500 special edition of the podcast. And, yes, you are reading that correctly. 43-year-old Takuma Sato has just won his second Indy 500. And, yeah, we couldn't quite believe it ourselves until about 30 laps from the end. But here to break it all down, as always, is Mr. Ryan Eric King. Hello, sir.
Hello. You may have watched the 500 preview episode, and I did pick a particular driver to win that race.
Right.
Yes, that driver, in fact, did not even finish said race. Whew.
Well, look, I can't even laugh. My guy didn't finish either. So it's just like, you know, I can't even mock you for it because we're in the same boat on this one. It's just, you know, my one was probably a bit more of a banker than yours, so it actually probably hurts a little bit more given that you picked Marcus Ericsson, and I picked Alex Rossi, and I thought that was a great pick.
It was looking like a good pick for a while.
Hello, Cam. How's it going?
Hello, everyone. I'm back. Reports of my demise were greatly exaggerated. Unfortunately, reports of my boy's demise in the contest for the Indy 500 were not exaggerated.
Ooh.
Somehow, somehow, of the three of us here, my pick did the best, but it's best of a bad bunch, really.
It's a hollow victory, really, isn't it? It's like your car made the flag. It's like, congratulations, you're automatically better than the others.
Most of it made the flag. Some of it got sent to the Shadow Realm. It happens.
As you do. We'll break down all of the Indy 500 in the next, well, I would say X number of minutes, but given us, we don't know how long this will end up going. But we will try. We're aiming for 45 to 60. Don't quote me on that. Anyway.
As long as it's shorter than the time to repair the pit lane attenuator.
Again, up for debate. Places you can find us real quick. If you're watching us on YouTube, hi, it's nice to see you. If not, and listen to our audio feeds like you normally do, you can find us on youtube.com/motorsport101, where all of these episodes will now be uploaded in full down the road at some point. Pretty cool. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow our personal handles, they are literally right below our names if you're watching us on YouTube. If not, it's at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, and CBuckley917. Shout out to RJ, who's watching along with us right now, but sadly can't be. He's in the middle of vacation, the jammy git. But I hope you enjoy the recording anyway, good sir. Again, if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our audio shows before they go out, and $10 gets you into the Supporters Club of our Discord server, where you can watch and listen into these shows live as they're being recorded, as well as early access to all the YouTube full-length episodes of the podcast before they're released to the general public as well. So, you know, that's all fun stuff. And you can find all of those details and a lot more on our website, motorsport101.com. So, we're going to go by King's beautifully crafted, slightly error-ridden set list here.
Oh, Lord. There was one error at the start with the episode number. Though, I think before we get to that, we do have to talk about the certain set of circumstances that we have at this particular Indy 500. Where it's been made clear to everyone, repeatedly on the broadcast, hey, it's finally real. It feels weird that there's no fans here. And then, you know, said NBC personality says, we miss you, fans.
Yeah. And for some members of the motorsport media, it really did only click a couple days before the race. And man,
it clicked hard. It clicked hard for a lot of people.
Like, wow. Is really going to be empty grandstands at the 500.
Yeah, it was like not a lot of fans show up for the practice and the qualifying sessions anyway. So when you see the cars lined up on the grid, like, you know, half an hour or an hour before the off, and then you see the grandstands with no one there when it's normally 200,000-300,000 people, that's, I think, when it really sunk in for me that, yeah, there's no one here besides the media and the teams. It's just like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. I mean, some of the drivers were really, you know, into the fact, like, for a lot of drivers, it was their first 500, but, like, the race is still the race for them. Like, in driver introduction, some people, like, some of the rookies had fun, like Rinus VK with his, with his spin and double point.
Now available in GIF form. I highly recommend you use it whenever you do something cool on Twitter, because Rinus VK wins the Motorsport 101 Let's Have Fun With This Driver Intro Award for a beautiful spin and double point. Like Magnum. You have to see it.
Big Rinus energy.
Yeah, I was like, Rinus immediately became my favorite to win. I was like, let's go Rinus VK. I want him to win. Just, like, there's so many great things about that GIF. Like, Ryan Hunter-Reay completely standing still. Hinchcliffe clapping along sheepishly, like, yeah, let's clap, like, all 20 people in the back. And then Rinus just does a spin and a finger point, because, sod it, why not? It's a beautiful GIF on so many levels.
Yeah, another point that I couldn't find, but hilarious, and also peak 2020, is that Ed Carpenter for this year's 500 is sponsored by the United States Space Force. And
amazing!
During the national anthem, they cut to Ed Carpenter, you know, standing alongside his car, hand across his heart, and next to him, saluting, is the general who's the head of the Space Force, the chief of space operations.
That's just a cadet saluting his general.
And he's in full Space Force uniform, as in he's in a camo uniform, which, again, why...
We made the point during our watch party on Sunday. What good is, like, ground camo in space?
You think it would just be black with little white dots for the stars, but no.
Right!
No,
right,
fucking... Fucking digicam. I guess digicamo works in space.
my man dressed like a gun camo in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, even though he's part of the Space Force. The one area of the military I'd argue you can be a bit more creative on color. But no. My man was in full desert camo.
Well, just to give off the hint that this is Space Force, instead of having, you know, the black embroidered lettering for the name and, like, the general stars in the cap, they have dark blue.
We're different. Amazing. I would have pissed myself if Carpenter immediately, like, took the knee. Just to see what the reaction would have been next to a Space Force general. Could you imagine the reaction if that had gone down?
Well,
nuclear meltdown in Indianapolis.
Well, we still had all the usual pomp and circumstance that we get with pre-race.
Oh, yeah.
With pre-race activities at the 500. We had, obviously, Jim Cornelison singing Back Home Again in Indiana to no one. We had, you know, two local, we had two doctors singing, well, two surgeons singing the national anthem. We had the Air Force Thunderbirds in flyover.
We had one of our brothers sing the national anthem, and he had some pipes on him. I was like, yes, sing me to heaven, Dr. General. Yes, sir. But, yeah, we had all the usual pomp and flair, even though there was no one there to see it. Again, weird.
Yep.
But it had to happen. And, then we kind of went racing. And it actually ended up, I think we ended up starting about 10 minutes ahead of schedule, which was nice, I suppose.
Yeah, no need to pause for applause. Nobody's here.
Nope.
No, but let's just get on with it, which is what I like to see in my motorsport. So we got starting, we were all rooting for Marco Andretti, you know, Indy 500 pole sitter. We thought maybe it's Marco's year. His lead lasts a grand total of maybe 300 yards.
It didn't even, wasn't even leading across the stripe.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, he did lead across the stripe, but Dixon's, you know, plan was simply just, I'm in second. I'm not allowed to start in front of Marco, but doesn't say I can't start behind Marco. And he just dips behind Marco, gets the toe, and just blows right past him.
Now, correction, Scott Dixon's plan was to flatten the field.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Well, like a pancake.
Well, we'll get to the points where he lost the lead. But
later.
In total, he led 111 out of all 200 laps.
Yeah, only just, I think that's what, five short of last year with Simon. And yep. One of, those are like the two highest counts for the last decade.
Yeah, and they've been two of the hottest 500s on record.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dixon was dialed in for, I'd argue, probably the first 170 laps of this race. It was like Dixon was so great at manipulating the traffic, breaking away from the toe, generating big gaps so everybody else seemed to trip over each other. But every time he built a solid lead, a caution would come out. And we got the first
one. Yeah, we got the first one real early on. But before then, the start looked clean for the most part, but it wasn't clean. Because one, Zach Veach pinned Ed Carpenter against the short shoot wall.
Not the Space Cadet, no.
Oh,
not
Lord.
The Space Force car. And Veach, clearly having tremendous respect for the United States military, immediately pinned Carpenter on the outside wall between one and two. Like, basically on the opening lap of the race, and that put Carpenter in the pits. Put him, I think, 14 laps down, and that was the end of Carpenter's effective challenge very early on.
But he was still out on track, just like, scoop up any spots for people who crash out.
Yeah.
Yep. It's all prize money, King. It all counts, you know? It all counts. Got to get those laps in. Anytime you can get the Space Force car, some TV time inadvertently is a bonus. It's like the days of Manor when they were in F1. It was like, anytime we're on the hard camera, we'll take it. Veach was a bit silly on that one, pinning Carpenter in.
Yeah, we did get the first caution very early on.
Took us six laps. Six laps in. Oh my god, how hot does something have to burn for the fire to be green? James Davison's right front brake clamped on, and shit was hot.
Exploded.
Yeah,
shit's on fire,
exploded.
Yo.
Exploded.
Apparently, both his front brakes were clamped shut for the entirety of his race.
Is that good when you're traveling at 250 miles per hour?
Well, I think when the field spread out, his fastest lap time was over 200 miles an hour. He did over 200 mile an hour lap with his brakes clamped shut.
Yeah, you can imagine that this generated quite a bit of heat.
Yeah,
and going down the back straight on lap six. The right front rotor catches on fire and explodes.
Yeah.
It was terrifying to see in real time. The whole thing exploded down the back straight. According to King's notes here, it looks like the front brake line either pinched or kinked. It clamped the front brake shut, 300 pounds plus of pressure. And by the time we'd actually seen the car on the caution flag come out after the exploded brake disc, we could see the fire coming off the front right tire, and it melted the tire off the rim.
No,
it was
the fire
hot.
Was green.
Yeah.
It was fucking green. And the hub melted down, and it melted down a magnesium wheel. Do you realize how hot shit has to get for magnesium not to just flash, but to melt?
Yeah,
this is not like your average science lesson Bunsen burner where you put a strip of magnesium over the top and see what happens. No, this is a lot more, shall we say, explosive. And thankfully, Davison was okay. He was able to get the car to a complete stop. And I even joked that it was something out of F-Zero GX, which I was quite proud of that one personally.
Show me your moves.
It wasn't pretty. That was the first caution of the day. Lap six. in the end. And there was a few guys came in. I think some of the back markers came in for an early stop to deliberately go off sequence.
Yep. Alternate strategy, which consisted of, I believe, Pagano, Askew, Power, Caster Neves, and Fernando. To try and jump the field, hoping for a caution. And to their credit, they were fast out front. Pagano looked like he did last year once he was out in clean air, but that was kind of the theme of this race. Nobody could pass.
Yeah, you pretty much had two or three laps after the restart to make a move. After that, you were not getting around anyone.
Yeah, it didn't matter how fast you were. Only the top two or three cars could really make a move on each other.
Yeah, once the tires had set in, once the grip started dropping off, once the turbulent air came into play, it was extremely hard to pass people. So, yeah,
caution. They didn't get their caution, and it kind of set the tone for all of their races from that point forward.
Right, and We wouldn't see another caution again until lap 25, and bad news, King. It's your man in the 20 grams of protein car. You picked Marcus Ericsson. Like, this is the part where I put the meme underneath the picture that goes, this is why this is a bad tweet. You should delete this.
This could be an episode on the podcast. So there's your problem.
Oh my god.
So you picked Marcus Ericsson to win the 500.
I wanted to pick a Ganassi, but I didn't want to pick Scott Dixon.
Now, as it stands, for the rest of this year, we've used up all picks for Scott Dixon. They are now banned. You have to pick someone else. Yes. That means you, Chris DeHardy.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ericsson just lost the car in the middle of the turn, pancaked the wall, and that's what they call a meatball flag in iRacing.
Yep, that's his day done. Oh,
it was done. We had a few more. I think most of the field came in on that lap 25 stop.
Yeah, 25 was when everyone committed.
Yeah. Everybody came in, apart from the guys that came in on lap 6. They thought, let's get a free stop out of the way. And they all pretty much did. And we got a lot of green flag running after that. A good 60 laps worth, nearly, of green flag running.
So and, what had happened was, a number of people pitted off sequence early on, and they didn't come in on 25. And one person that found themselves near the front was Simon Pagano. He had a couple laps out front, though. After the lap 25, after like the lap 25 restart, he ended up in a situation where it was him behind Ryan Hunter-Reay, and
that was much later on.
Oh, much later on. Okay,
yeah, that was much later on. I'm gonna take the reins on that one.
so I'll just edit this part out in post.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, we got a lot of green flag running, and it pretty much at this point in the race, we're just realizing Dixon has command of this thing. It was
nobody could touch him.
Yeah, no one could touch him. A lot of people were like, this race is pretty much it's over.
Yeah, and I mean, we get 5 or 6 500s a decade where we think like 70 laps in, oh, this person's dominant. They're gonna win. And yet,
yeah. Like I said, I think by the time we got to lap 84, which was the next major incident, I think Dixon had something like a 10-second lead underneath him.
He leapfrogged his way to the front of the field, or he ended up at the front of the field, and there was lap traffic that those behind him could not clear because of the dirty air. So he just drove the fuck away.
Yep, like they were the bottleneck as Dixon took off into the distance. until lap 84. Lap 84 was when Dalton Kellett lost control of his car and went into the turn three wall, and that brought out our next caution.
Yeah, yep. And again, another instance of just driver losing the car mid-corner. And reminds me a little bit of the incidents here in 2018, when it was also very fucking hot. And that was the first year of the IRA teams.
With Kellett, I forgot who it was, but someone was making moves on Kellett and came down in front of him on entry to turn three.
Yeah.
He lost the air on his wing, and he just didn't know how to deal with it and just went into the turn three wall.
Yeah. Yep. Chalk that one up into inexperience, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so. So that brought out another caution. A few guys in the field again take a stop. Field reshuffles a little bit. We're getting ready to restart on lap 93. And coming out of turn four, Connor Daly spins on the exit of turn four. He's gone too narrow. Coming out of turn four, he spun it. Oliver Askew doesn't see Daly's car till the last minute. He's in a cloud of smoke. He has to take evasive action. He spins out himself.
No, but the thing was that Askew, like, Daly wasn't in front of Askew in any way. Like, there was just a cloud of smoke he couldn't see, and he just panicked and lost control of the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the way he panicked. Spun.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he panicked himself. He spun out. Daly looked like he might have just about been able to save his spin. He was dangerously close to the turn four inside wall. And then Askew spinning car himself hits Daly's car. Daly goes into the wall. Askew goes into the wall. They're both out.
Yeah, Askew actually, he hit the wall first. He hit the wall at almost unabated speed.
Yeah.
It was so sudden, we thought initially that something broke on his car.
Right, and he rebounded off the car and clipped Daly while he was heading towards the outside wall.
That would count as a combo in Space Cadet 3D Pinball.
Activate the gravity well. It wasn't pretty. Thankfully, again, both drivers okay. But yes, as I said, it took another seven laps to clean those cars off the field, make sure the track was okay. Both Daly and Askew out, but again, thankfully, both all right. We got restarted on lap 100 at half distance, and we got into a phase of about 20 laps where the two fastest dudes in the field were comfortably Dixon and Rossi, and they started basically playing pinball with each other by taking each other's slipstreams, basically, and just swapping the lead lap after lap, basically, as they were going over the line, and trying to break away from the field. Both of them were clearly on the same wavelength of, let's get away from the field and turn this into a two-horse race, basically.
Well, they tried, but they could not, because I believe it was Pato O'Ward right behind them, wouldn't let them get away.
Yeah, O'Ward was able to, you know, keep a somewhat close.
Keep it within about a second. He kept it within about a second for that stint. It was like when Rossi showed up, it's like a Super Smash Brothers A New Challenger Appears trailer.
Yes,
that was the first time we saw anyone be able to actually pass Dixon at all.
Yeah. And like we talked about Award, we talked about Askew, and people are going to ask about, hey, where's the third McLaren? Where's the McLaren of Fernando Alonso? And Alonso's race was pretty much completely derailed by clutch issue, where there was no way for him to engage the clutch to pull away from the pit box, so he needed to be pushed out of his pit box by his crew, meaning that any time they came in the pit, he was immediately losing anything he gained on track, and especially in a race where it is really hard to overtake this year, Alonso had no chance at winning.
Nope.
Yeah, he was, even before the clutch issue, he was fairly anonymous, even compared to his own McLaren teammates. You know?
No.
This place is tough.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I suspect there's always been a little bit of an air of arrogance about Alonso in the Formula One culture of just thinking they're just going to roll up at the 500 and dominate because we're Formula One drivers. And,
like Lewis's comments about Alonso doing well his first year. Well,
yeah.
He finished the race. That's about all there is to say about Alonso's day.
Yeah, he finished the race.
It's the first time he's finished the 500 in three attempts. Good for him.
Yeah.
So we go to lap 122 here, and after about 20 laps of lead top in between Dixon and Rossi, there's another caution. And this one hurt because it was Alex Palou in the wall from P9 at turn two. He just lost it and went and checked up straight into the wall. And that was a darn shame because he was running very, very well indeed for his first ever 500 attempt.
Yeah, the other Spaniard was having such a great race. Just before this accident, during our watch along, we were talking about how Palou was making a great case for Rookie of the Year, that, you know, he was really impressive in the Coyne car. Well, Dale Coyne with Team Go car. It was heartbreaking to see him hit the wall.
Yeah, this one hurt. Again, another case of losing the car mid-corner. This time he lost the rear, tried to catch it, and it sent him up into the outside wall.
Yeah, that was a very unfortunate accident. Palou had a phenomenal run. He was running in the top 10 most of the way through. He was in ninth when that accident happened.
He was legitimately one of the fastest cars, not only in qualifying before the weight jacker failure, but in the race, he had speed. But again, the symptom of the turbulent air and the tire drop-off, he was quick, but he couldn't go anywhere with it.
Yeah, story of a lot of the cars in the upper midfield this time round. You know, fast in their own right, but again, unable to make real movement through the field. But there was one other significant incident as a result of this 122 caution. A lot of the field is coming in for a fresh stop. And we see on the camera, Alex Rossi has come into the pits. He's coming out. He's been released into a three-wide situation, and that was never going to work. On Indianapolis's pit road, and he makes contact with the rear of Takuma Sato's car. And in IndyCar, it's pretty much a stonewall penalty. If you have contact in the pits like that, you will be done with an unsafe release penalty. And in the context of the 500, that means back of the grid for the restart. And that dropped Rossi from a net third place all the way to the back. And
not net third. He was second. He was ahead of Sato. If he didn't make contact, he would have been in front of Sato for the restart.
Right.
Well, okay, maybe, yes, because Sato would have got out ahead of him on pit lane. But either way, I mean, that took... I mean, some were arguing this, that Sato was in between lanes. To that I say he had a McLaren on his outside. There was nothing... Sato was an innocent bystander here.
Yeah, he was already in a two-wide. Rossi's team should never have released him into the path of two other cars at the same time on pit road.
Yeah,
that
like,
was never gonna
the
work.
Thought was that, you know, there was, the lanes are wide enough, there's enough room to go three wide. But to do so is very risky.
Yeah, I think they panicked.
I think they had to have done, because they had to have thinking, we don't want to lose track position to Sato here, who's been, again, fast pretty much all the way through. Remember that, it becomes very important later.
Well, it becomes important as well. Andretti's pit crew, their pit crews are just not on it for any of their cars. Any time they would gain, and they were... Andretti and Penske kind of blew it in opposite directions here, where Penske was awful in qualifying, but really fast in the race, but couldn't go anywhere with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Andretti was the other way around, where they were apocalyptically fast in qualifying, especially with Marco, and before the wind had affected their qualifying runs for the Fast 9.
Right,
but
right.
They just didn't have race pace.
I think Newgarden made up 11 or 12 positions on pit stops alone.
Oh, his crew was on it.
His Chris Crew was fantastic. And on the other end of the scale, James Hinchcliffe lost 10 places at one point due to a dodgy pit stop on his end. So you could see where Andretti had screwed the pooch. Again, Rossi gets released unsafely, and Hinch, another one of their top gunners, lost 10 spots on a dodgy pit stop as well, where the anti-stall, I think, might have kicked in or something along those lines.
I'm wondering if Andretti's running a lot of cars now here.
Yep,
six. Like a third of the field between their own cars and cars they support on the engineering side.
Mm.
Not so much on the speed of the cars and the talent in the driving seat. I'm wondering if they're spreading themselves too thin just on the crews.
Maybe. It's an interesting theory. But we saw Rossi go all the way to the back of the field for the next restart. Remember that.
Another
it
funny
also
gif.
Becomes important.
Yeah. We got another funny Rossi hand gesture. Go! Catch up to the safety car, damn it!
Yeah, he's...
Catch up to the queue!
Him infuriously gesticulating at Max Chilton because he was almost going to get left behind on the safety car restart. You could tell at this point... Rossi was driving angry at this point, and we all know what happens to Alex Rossi at Indy when he drives angry. He makes a couple of really aggressive overtakes, and then .. Wait, he's put it in the wall! Oh, no!
Yeah, Rossi...
It looked like he just drove it a bit too low in turn two, and just lost the car.
Well, before this happened, we should mention what happened to my boy.
Oh, yes, because the Penske's were pretty much a handful of the cars they decided to pit off sequence, and Simon Pagenaud ended up at the front of the field, led a couple laps, was doing real good until this restarts.
Well, yeah, he was trying to work an alternate strategy, didn't quite work out, crept back into the teens more on, again, Penske's pit stop work rather than being able to pass on track. Goes for a move on Ryan Hunter-Reay. Hunter-Reay closes the door in the short chute. And that's Pagenaud's front wing gone.
It was dangling like a broken nose. Literally. A human broken nose. As he limped into the pits after that.
Yeah, and it actually had to do 3/4 of a lap with basically no front wing. And this backed the whole field up where they went about 5 wide on the back straight. Rossi sending it around the outside alongside Helio.
Right,
just
right,
fucking and yeeting, and that was the that was the end of Pagenaud's race as far as any potential to get a good result
from a competition standpoint. That was
Jeremy.
I think the quote from Cam on our watch party was Ryan Hunter-Reay, you are now officially on my shit list.
Yes, along with a loud hearty fuck.
That was definitely there too. See if you can find that out of the clip on the watch party. It's as hilarious as it sounds. But yeah. Rossi drives a bit too angry. He puts it in the wall on lap 144. That obviously brings out another caution. We get a few more green flag laps after this now. And we're now into that phase of the race where we get towards lap 170. This is when guys had come in for their final.
What we should say before that is that during that last stint off the restart, another new challenger appeared. Takuma Sato didn't just catch Scott Dixon. He passed him, and Dixon couldn't get past.
Yeah, they had their final round of stops, and Sato had actually now overtaken Dixon, and Dixon for the first time.
Yeah, we thought in the previous stint, okay, Dixon's playing with his food here.
But the thing was, at the time, we thought Dixon had no way of challenging him. But reading the post-race interviews, apparently Dixon was saving fuel, that they knew that they wanted.
Well, they both were.
Yeah, they both were, but Dixon and Mike Hull, like Mike Hull was doing the fuel numbers for all of Ganassi, and they wanted to make sure that when the time came, and they made their final stop, that Dixon could go flat out at the end.
Even then, though, I mean, in the previous stint, Dixon, before their final stops, Dixon couldn't pass Sato. And we thought, okay, he's playing with his food here. Then the next stint happens. They're both playing with fuel mixes, trying to save fuel. Obviously, Dixon has an advantage in keeping in the draft. But even later on, supposedly Dixon turned it up to full rich.
Yeah. So,
and Sato still had the punch out of turn two.
So here's the thing. It'll become important later on. But Dixon had enough fuel that for the last 10 laps, he could run on fuel on full power. Sato said in a post-race interview that there was no way for them to do that. The last lap, he knew he would not have been able to do on full power. He was planning on being as defensive as possible on the last handful of laps.
Yeah, but as the race played out as
the race didn't need to play out that
the
way.
The race didn't need to play out that way, but even before that, Sato was able to get the draft off of some lap cars and put them between him and Dixon.
Yep.
And he actually, by the time the incident, the incident, the unfortunate event happened, he had already basically broken the draft.
Yep.
And he could sit in the lap car draft. Dixon was almost more under threat from Graham Rahal, who in all of this was hounding him for second place.
Yeah.
RLL came alive in the last 50 laps.
They really did. Last 50 laps, late race pace was sensational from RLL. Sato had about a second and a half in hand with around 6 or 7 laps to go. And we're thinking, Sato's got one hand on the trophy here. Like, Dixon's got to pass these dudes now. He can't do it. And we're all thinking, hang on, it looks like Sato might have this in the bag. And then we got confirmation that Sato had it in the bag because on lap 196... the race effectively ended because Spencer Pigot had a nasty accident spinning out of turn four. This was awful. He had an awful spin coming out of turn four at 220 miles an hour. And he crashes right into the pit divider and bounces into the outside wall afterwards. It was like something you would get in a really unfortunate iRacing incident. We would know. King does plenty of races on streaming them on our Discord server.
Came off of turn four, lost the car. The initial hit wasn't that bad. The second hit, oh my god, it's like a baseball bat crack.
Yeah,
just kaboom, into the pit wall attenuator. The attenuator is completely destroyed.
Yeah, it's all gone. They had to lift Spencer out of the car. He was on a stretcher for a little while. He clearly had the wind knocked out of his
sails. No, he was not on the stretcher. He was lying flat on the track.
Yeah, he was on the track. We saw him just before NBC did one of their opportune commercial breaks. But we saw him sit up.
You gotta love it. It's like, oh, 20 laps to go. It's like, this is our last commercial break. We'll be live, uninterrupted till the finish, until Pigot put it in the wall. It's like, let's squeeze another advert in.
Yeah, this is the finish, guys, right?
This is the finish. But yeah, IndyCar, after the race, estimated that it would have taken anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half to repair the pit wall attenuator. It wasn't just the tires. It looks like there was actual structural damage to the wall.
Structural damage.
From the force of the hit. And as a result, with four laps to go, they do not throw a red flag. They keep it under caution, and the race is over. Yes, again, Takuma Sato takes his second Indy 500.
It was crazy to watch. We got the news of, I think it was about 3 to go, that they said there will be no red flag, and that was the end of the race. There was a lot of hellfire and brimstone on Twitter over that finish. To which I say, IndyCar, I think, got it spot on. Like, there's many reasons why. One, the TV window. They said that themselves,
that was the biggest thing.
Yeah, it would have been 60 to 90 minutes to fix the damage from that incident, and they're going to miss the TV window. They'd have to be moved to CNBC, and no one wants the IndyCar's biggest race of the year to be moved to CNBC.
This race already suffered. It suffered on the ratings enough. This was the lowest 500 ratings in...
Yeah.
Jeez. What was the number, King? Decades?
Decades. Like, it's... My argument to why the TV ratings were so low is that it wasn't on a holiday weekend like it normally is in May. That everyone isn't sitting at home with nothing to do and only the 500 to watch. There, it was in such a crowded and packed sports environment where literally every sports league in the United States is back to playing now.
Not just that, it's playoffs. Hockey's in their playoffs. Basketball is in their playoffs. And baseball is happening right now as well.
And this race ran head to head with the Champions League final, the biggest game in soccer, or at least in club soccer anyway.
Well, that's not really going to affect, you know, American TV ratings.
Yeah, whatever. But race ends up being called, and I mean, 9 of the last 2500s have ended under caution.
Right.
Is anyone here saying Dario's 3-1 wins are somehow illegitimate because of that?
No.
People are like, they should institute a green-white checkered rule, to which I say, this is the Indianapolis 500, not the Indianapolis 502, not the Indianapolis 505, it's the Indy 500.
I mean,
and no, NASCAR is the exception.
Yep.
There's no reason that IndyCar has to be an exception too.
Right, and all I was going to say on top of that is that if they did throw the red flag, even if you did have this supposed sprint finish, it takes two laps for the tires and the engines to get heat sufficient heat in them for them to drive safely. It would have been a one lap sprint finish, having at to wait 90 minutes for. And yeah, the Indy 500 having to wait 90 minutes for a one lap sprint finish is dumb on any level.
Unsafe. It's unsafe because people are going to make Hail Mary moves. It's the Indy 500.
And for the most part, the lead won't change because in a one lap sprint, whoever's in second is not going to have enough time to catch the leader to even attempt a move.
Yeah. No, restarts as we saw in this race heavily favored the leader pretty much all the way through.
That's not just a this race thing. It's an every race thing.
It's relative, unless someone just has a ridiculously dominant car. It's very rare to see someone just up and drag race someone off a restart. And I think some of it stemmed from as well. Scott Dixon is a fan favorite. Scott Dixon dominated the race. Well, he dominated the whole race, but he didn't win. Therefore, Takuma didn't deserve it. To which I say, in the last 50 laps, Takuma Sato tore that out of Dixon's hands.
He did.
Because he was the one person Dixon didn't have an answer for with the way the race played out.
Yeah, Scott Dixon was fast all day, but Takuma Sato was fast when it mattered.
It doesn't matter how many laps you lead if you don't lead the last one.
Yeah. No matter what lap might be the last one.
Hi, Toyota. How you doing?
But David Croft said that Anthony Davidson won. Yeah.
Well, David Croft says a lot of things that doesn't mean we have to like them.
But just to check in on Spencer Pigot, he did get transported to Methodist Hospital, and he was later cleared and released from the hospital. Spencer's fine.
Yep, Spencer's okay. It was a hellacious impact.
Big one. And, even by Indy 500 standards, a big one.
Yeah, you don't get small crashes at the 500.
But, man, oh man, I'm glad that Sato did get a win with Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan.
Redemption!
Yeah, redemption.
Fucking redemption!
Because when he came to IndyCar and he had his first shot at a 500 back in 2012, it was with Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan, and he made that turn
against
one.
Ganassi.
Yeah, against Ganassi, made the turn one move against Dario to try to get the win, and lost it. Put it in the turn one wall. Eventually he moves on to Andretti, where he got his 500 win. Now he comes home to Ray Hall and gets them a 500 win.
Bobby Rahal was jumping up and down, crying in the pit lane. It was great.
First and third, two cars on the podium, including the win. That's dreamlike for Bobby Rahal right there. Yeah. We saw David Letterman amongst the victory speech, complete with full Santa beard. He really has just embraced Father Santa Christmas beard in the middle of August. We saw Letterman up there. We saw the first time. We saw the new podium lift being used to lift the winning car onto the podium to join in the celebrations, and Takuma took a milk dunk because he's lactose intolerant.
Yeah, what a boy. He did take a long sip, though.
A little sip.
Initial sip, and it dunked it on his head.
Oh, man.
Good man.
I should point out that this is Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan's second 500 win. The last time they won the 500 was with Buddy Rice in 2004. And just as a point of reference, Takuma Sato is the sixth oldest 500 winner. He is 11 months younger than Buddy Rice is today.
That's incredible. And as
he's 43 years young.
The man just gets better and better. He ran such a clean... I mean, even last year he was in prime position in case Pagano and Rossi ended up in a ball of carbon fiber. He's been good around here for years. He has the win in 2017. And he ran a really clean race for the first three quarters of it. And then when it came time to drop the hammer, he went and got after it and took it from the dominant car.
As RJ said in the chat, he's aged like a fine wine. It's only his sixth ever IndyCar win.
He's making him count.
He's picking the good ones. And yeah, only the 20th man to ever have multiple 500 wins. It's a very exclusive
and only the
club.
I believe the sixth born outside the United States to have more than one win.
Yep.
Rarefied air.
That's crazy. Yeah, and, well, let's have a quick rundown of the ultimate finishing positions here, and we'll pick out some fun stories as well, because there's some good names in here. Takuma Sato, your winner of the 104th running of the Indy 500. Scott Dixon, hell of an effort in second place there. And I think if he's thinking championship, he'll gladly take the 91 points he picked up this finishing in second.
Yeah, you might as well. We're going to get to the standings later, but basically engrave it already. That said... This is the same guy who said he'd trade every championship he's ever won for more 500s, so I don't think he's going to be too happy with how this one played out.
Dixon was magnanimous in defeat like he usually is. He's a very classy gent, Scott Dixon, but you could tell that one.
You
could
see it in his mouth said, his mouth was honorable in defeat, his eyes said hate.
Pain. Spain without the S. this one hurt. He knew he was close on this one, and it
third
just
runner up
did.
Finish as well.
Oh God, Dixon, Jesus Christ! As mentioned, Graham Rahal third, great result for him and the RLL boys as well. He's been there for a while. Great result for Bobby and the team there. First and third, phenomenal result there for RLL and Racing. Santino Ferrucci fourth for Dale Coyne. Say what you will about this kid off the track, the talent was never been. There's never really in question.
That's a phenomenal. He ran a good clean race.
Got to the finish. It really showed, like, how much pace the Coyne cars did have.
He and Bailu were putting on a show.
Yeah, very good stuff indeed. Santino Ferrucci in fourth. Joseph Newgarden, who again gained so many places in the pits coming up through the field, and, you know, was in that leading group, just didn't have the late race pace at the very end, fifth place for Joseph Newgarden.
I think he was a prime example of speed versus track position, where... It looked like the other Penske's were all faster than him in isolation.
Yeah.
Excuse me, but none of them had the track position to make it work, whereas Joseph did. That said, he had a train behind him at the end.
Indeed. It was tight, but he made it work. Rookie of the Year, officially voted Rookie of the Year, and highest finishing rookie, well, kind of by proxy, really. Only two of them saw the flag, and only one was on the lead lap. But Pato O'Ward in sixth place for McLaren. Great result for Pato there. Red Bull's loss seems to be IndyCar's game.
He did a great job. He ran a clean race. Put in a couple really good moves on restarts.
He's a very brave man, Pato, certainly.
Brave. Very flew the McLaren flag, love him or hate him, but, I think first of many good results here. I think he has the touch.
Indeed. Certainly. James Hinchcliffe, seventh, complete with nightmare-inducing mask. again, lost 10...
Highest finishing Andretti cars.
Yeah.
Yeah!
I mean, again... their race pace wasn't there, and their pit stops were hot trash.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, again, I remember Hinch, I said Hinch lost 10 places on one of those pit stops earlier on in the race. He actually did quite well to come back and finish in 7th in the end, all things considered. Good result there for Hinch. Colton Herta in 8th, who is now, you've now officially decided, gets the new mantle of great hair, because he does have great
magnificent
hair.
Magnificent hair. Glorious hair. So.
Magnificent. Glorious hair. And a good race for him as well. Good to see him get to the flag and get a decent result this time after the tragedy of last year.
He finished! He finished the race!
He finished!
Let's go!
No kidding. So yeah, Colton Herta in 8th. Jack Harvey, ladies and gentlemen, P9. That's a hell of a result for Britain's Own there, Jack Harvey.
Friend of
great
the show.
Great result there. Friend of the show, you don't know Jack, in 9th. Good job, man. Well done, sir. We're very happy for you here at M101. That's a fantastic result. Continuing Harvey, just proving like he belongs here now. He really is one of the better runners in the field now.
The
biggest race of them all.
The Shank Andretti partnership, I've said it before on the show, but it's showing that Jack Harvey, all this time, wasn't the driver who was slow. He's been good result after good result all this year.
Certainly not the driver, indeed. Cam Shitlist in 10th. There, I'm in up the top 10. Hunter
I should
Ray.
Also say, for those of you who watched the live stream, the watch party, he was my secondary pick for the race. It was between him and Takuma. All I have is regret.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
My number one pick and my number two pick hit each other. God damn it.
Uncle Helio in 11th place there. Good job from the veteran Penske runner there.
He had a couple insane passes around the outside on restarts. The man still got it.
Indeed. Hopefully it won't be the last of the Yellow Submarine in some capacity. Felix Rosenquist, King Phoenix in 12th. Marco Andretti. Oh,
anonymous.
13th.
Dropped off. You know, all week he had the issue of his car was comically fast out on its own in qualifying trim and leading other cars, but he just couldn't draft up to anybody, and that was only worsened when nobody could draft up to anybody during the race.
He
lost the lead on lap one and just spent the race being pretty anonymous.
When track position's at a premium and it's hard to overtake, track position's key. If you can't keep people behind you, you won't win here. And
No chance. And Marco was a sitting duck most of the way around, unfortunately. Maybe next year for Marco. Again.
It might be.
Willpower in 14th. Zach Veach 15th. J.R. Hildebrand 16th. Max Chilton 17th. Charlie Kimball 18th. Those were the last of the lead lap runners. Then we had Tony Kanaan in 19th. Rinus VK, the lap down. Damn it.
Yeah.
We were rooting for you, Rinus. We were all rooting for you.
I don't even remember what happened to Rinus during the race.
It was the pit lane, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the pit lane.
The pit lane incident. I think he overcooked it in pit lane.
Yeah, Ed Carpenter Racing, straight up, they were straight up not having a good time this year.
And he was the one Chevy up there all the way through in qualifying. The one Chevy in the top 13.
Well, yeah, we only got one Chevy in the top 10. Well, two Chevys in the top 10. Newgarden and Award. Besides that, you know, it was just
the
domination.
Yeah, it seemed like Chevy had a good race engine, but again, if you can't pass and you qualify bad, you can't use that speed.
Yep.
No. Fernando Alonso, 21st. Like, Fernando, it's okay. You're not getting the triple crown. You don't have to bother if you're not taking this seriously, Chief. It's fine.
All aboard the Montoya Le Mans hype train.
Yep.
Let's
Your
get it.
Your triple crown is here.
Let's get it. Simon Pagenaud with a broken front nose in 22nd. Ben Hanley on the Dragon Spreed for 23rd. Sage Karam, 24th.
I will say, props to Ben Hanley for just getting that shitbox to the flag.
Yep.
That car was built at the last minute and was horrible. I remember Ben Hanley last year. I don't think Hanley is a bad driver around here at all.
The kid's a missile in LMPs.
Yeah, so I don't think this was on Hanley. I think this was more just a case of dragon speed and last minute preparation never goes well. And yeah, the car was slow as dirt. So yeah, no surprises there. But a good effort from Hanley regardless. Sage Karam 24th. And into then the guys that either had severe problems or just did not make the flag at all. Spencer Piggott, as I mentioned, crashed out in 25th there. Ed Carpenter was 13 laps down in the end after his early tangle with Zach Veach. Alex Palou put it in the wall on lap 121. Connor Daly and Askew Spin, we mentioned, 29th and 30th. Dalton Kennett, 31st. Marcus Ericsson, 32nd in the wall. And James Davison, as mentioned, last over the line. First car to retire with a case of green glowing brake disc. That's what you get for putting the Back the Blue logo on your car.
All I'm going to say is it's not a surprise he couldn't make it to lap 18.
Anyway, yep. Now, as mentioned, scoring system, 9 points if you were on pole position. The fast nine got points from 9 to 1, depending on finishing position, and double points for the race itself. So 100 for the win in this case, and it's had a dramatic effect on the championship standings. Unless you're Scott Dixon.
No, this just makes up for that one race that Taku missed earlier in the season.
Right, Dixon now has an 84 point lead in the drivers' championship standings.
Back it up, we're going home.
Yeah. If Scott Dixon blows an 84 point lead in this championship, I will eat this jersey live on a show.
I think that is the safest. That's even safer than King's Reno bet from last year.
And to dig this hole even deeper. Unlike other seasons where the Indy 500 and the season finale are both double point races, the season finale won't be a double points race. So there's no one.
Nope.
There's no way.
He has effectively a race and a half that he could completely phone in, not finish, and still be leading the championship.
Yes, a race and a half with 5 to go.
It's over. People somehow forget. This will be. Yeah. Somehow this will be, probably in Dixon's eyes, relatively hollow considering another runner-up for the 500.
Indeed.
Only he could win a championship with races to go and be like, this year wasn't a success.
The only solace that Dixon will take is, Newgarden will take in second right now, is that Dixon will not be happy to lift his, 6th IndyCar championship now?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. He has an 84-point lead.
Joseph just needs to stop taking the one when he wins the championship.
Yeah, he puts the one
on his card, it just blows up in his face.
Stick to 2, it was a perfectly cool number. As mentioned, Joseph Newgarden in second on 251. Pato O'Ward is third in the championship on 218. What an effort that is! Pato is up there. He's 4 points ahead of Graham Rahal there in fourth on 214. Simon Pagenaud on 212.
All I feel is pain.
What else is new? Takuma Sato in 6th on 207. Colton Herta in 7th on 189.
Can we just say, Taku got over half his points haul from this week alone between the Fast 9 and the 500 win.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think he got 115 points off this week's work, and he's got 207 for the year. So
good
says God. A lot about how dramatic a spin you can take in terms of off of this one race. As mentioned, Colton Herta 7th on 189, Santino Ferrucci on 181, Will Power 9th on 175. It is weird saying Will Power is 9th in the championship at any given year, given it's Will friggin' Power. And Felix Rosenquist in 10th. On 157, that rounds off the top 10 in the championship again. And it's hard to believe we've only got 5 races to go. It feels like we've been here, I've only just gotten here, and now we're already like more than halfway through the races in this recalibrated season we're getting.
Not only are we more than halfway through this weekend, we have a doubleheader, and then we only have 3 races left.
Yeah, we have a doubleheader at Gateway this weekend on August 29th and August 30th. We'll talk about those on next week's show. A doubleheader then. And remember, the IndyCar does not race in September. The whole of September is off the table, unfortunately, due to COVID-related issues, of course. We'll be back after that for two more races at Indianapolis' road course, the Harvest Grand Prix double bill on October 2nd and 3rd, and of course then the season finale at the moved St. Petersburg round on October 25th. So yeah, only five races to go. Dixon, you could probably make the case, already has one hand on the championship. And lads, we're already over an hour, so, you know, let's just sum it up real quickly. I mean, we got a couple of little extra things like, oh, cool, Jeantot was there, so that was interesting. More speculation. But what did you guys make of this year's 500 in general?
It was okay.
Yeah, for all the outside circumstances, this is probably the best 500 we're going to get. And I'm not going to say it's a bad race, because it definitely was not a bad race to watch.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad race to watch. I would, On a 1 to 10 scale, I'd probably give it a 7.5.
Yeah, that feels about
right. It was all right.
Yeah,
it was. Again, I think the limiting factor was just there was so much dirty air that nobody could the amount of cautions that we had, this would have been a snooze fest.
Yeah, the cautions is what kind of made this race interesting, which is probably not the ideal way around you want an Indy 500 to be, but it's still made for a very intriguing race, a good 500. I wouldn't say it was a great 500, but certainly an enjoyable time. And who isn't happy for Takuma Sato, one of the real good dudes in IndyCar and in sports in general? We love Takuma.
I can name two pancake enthusiasts.
Yeah, just a touch. But that'll do it for our Indy 500 special here on Motorsport 101. We'll have another episode later in the week talking about a absolutely bonkers MotoGP weekend in Styria. And oh boy, we got a lot to get into with that one as well. That's going to be a very fun episode as well. But in the meantime, places you can find us one more time, youtube.com/motorsport101. Please subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Again, our social media is in the description down below and next to our tags. But again, if you're listening on the audio side, Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at CBuckley917, at RJ O'Connell, even though he's only here in spirit this time round. And of course, the podcast Twitter at Motorsport_101. Please follow us on there if you enjoy it. We're also on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio versions of our show. $10 gets you in the supporters club of our Discord server. And you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded and get early access to all the full-length video versions of the show. Thank you very much for watching or listening, or both, who knows. We'll catch you back for some MotoGP in Styria. But from me, Dre Harrison, Ryan King, and Cam Buckley, catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Bye.
Yes, again, Sato.